Take a walk south of the main field here at Oshkosh, down to the seaplane base on the water. It's a different world down there, quieter. The pavement noise falls away, and you get the slap of little waves against the floats, the smell of lake water and hot engine oil, and a whole row of airplanes riding at anchor like they're waiting for something. And parked right in the middle of them, 9 times out of 10, is a high-wing airplane with a big round nose and a stance like a bulldog, doors like a barn, a radial engine up front that ticks and pops as it cools. That's a Beaver. And pull up a chair, because the story of how that airplane came to be is one of the best stories in all of aviation. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Tail Dragger, and this is the hangar. Down here by the water with the float planes, we're going to talk about the airplane that a bunch of grizzled bush pilots basically designed themselves. Now, before we get rolling, let me tell you who's keeping the lights on today. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSold.com Aviation. Challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo private pilot, instrument rating all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. And friend, if there was ever an airplane that earned a coin, it's this one. Check them out at AviationSold.com. All right, let's set the scene. It's 1946, the war's just over. Up in Canada, at a company called De Havilland Canada, the folks in Toronto are looking around, trying to figure out what to build, now that they're not cranking out trainers for the war effort. And they land on an idea. They want to build a bush plane, a proper one. An airplane for the North Country, for the float pilots and the ski pilots hauling trappers and prospectors and mining gear into lakes that don't have names, let alone runways. Now here's where it gets interesting. Instead of a bunch of engineers sitting in an office in Toronto deciding what a bush pilot needs, De Havilland Canada did something smart, something almost nobody does. They went and asked the bush pilots. They had a man for exactly this, a fellow named Punch Dickens. And if you don't know that name, you should. Punch Dickens was a genuine northern legend, one of the great pioneer bush flyers, a man who'd flown the Barren Lands and the Arctic when the maps were mostly blank space. He was with De Havilland Canada now, and he went out and he collected the wants and the gripes and the wish lists from the men who actually flew for a living in the bush. And the answers they gave were not what an engineer expects. The company figured the pilots would want speed, more crews, get from A to B quicker, and the bush pilots, near as I can tell, just about laughed them out of the room. One of them famously said something to the effect of, "You only need enough speed to keep from hitting the ground." What they wanted was power, grunt, the ability to haul a heavy load off a short glassy lake on a hot day with no wind. Speed doesn't get you off the water, power does, so that was request number one. Give us power, don't you dare give us a dainty little engine. Now De Havilland Canada wanted to use one of their own British engines, a Gypsy, to keep it in the family and keep it cheap. The bush pilots said no, absolutely not. They wanted the Pratt & Whitney R985 Wasp Jr., a big American radial, 450 horsepower, 9 cylinders in a circle. Why that engine? Because they knew it. Because it was everywhere. Because it was tough as an anvil and you could get parts for it in any hangar from Fairbanks to Fort Nelson. And because after the war, there were surplus Wasp Juniors sitting around cheap. A bush pilot doesn't care about elegant. A bush pilot cares about the engine still running when he's 400 miles from the nearest mechanic. So the Wasp Junior it was, request number two. And this one, I love this one, the doors. The bush pilots told De Havilland, make the doors big. Big and square. On both sides. Why? Because the standard unit of freight in the North Country was a fuel drum. A 45-gallon fuel drum. And they were sick and tired of airplanes where you had to practically disassemble the drum to get it through some dainty little curved door. They wanted to be able to roll a full drum right up to the airplane and heave it inside without a fight. So De Havilland Canada built the Beaver with these tall, wide, flat freight doors, sized so a fuel drum goes in clean. That's not a styling choice. That's a working pilot's choice, baked right into the airframe, and there were more. They wanted every control and every fuel selector and every gauge where a pilot could reach it with heavy mitts on in 40 below. They wanted the fuel tanks down low in the belly so you could gravity feed and gas up from a drum with a wobble pump, no ladder required. They wanted flaps that would hang the airplane on the prop and let it come over the trees slow and drop onto a short strip or a little pocket of water. Every one of those decisions came from a man who'd been scared on a short lake and lived to complain about it. The chief designer on the project was a fellow named Fred Buller, working under the boss of the whole operation, Phil Garrett, and the aerodynamics man, Dick Hiscox, did the wing. And what they came up with wasn't pretty in the magazine sense. It was purposeful, slab-sided, honest, an airplane with no interest in impressing anybody but the guy flying it. Let me paint you the moment. It all came together. August 16, 1947, Downsview, Ontario. The test pilot climbs in, and this is a good name too, because the test pilot was Russ Bannock, another wartime aviator of real reputation. He fires up that Wasp Jr. 9 cylinders barking, that deep uneven radial idle blue smoke off the exhaust stacks, the whole airframe shaking a little the way a radial airplane does at low RPM like a horse stamping in the gate. And she flies. First flight that day. And the prototype was on floats, right where a beaver belongs, up off the water on the very first hop. Now the airplane went to work, and this is the part that gets me, because you'd think an airplane that specialized designed by a committee of cranky bush pilots for hauling drums into no-name lakes would sell a few dozen and fade away. Instead, they built nearly 1,700 of them, and they went everywhere. The bush pilots got them shore all across the Canadian North and into Alaska, but then the United States Army took a long look at this airplane, and in the early 1950s, they held a competition for a new utility airplane. And the Beaver, a Canadian design, beat the American entries and won it. The Army bought them by the hundreds. They called it the L-20 and later the U-6. Beavers flew in Korea, hauling wounded and cargo and brass. They flew off skis in Antarctica, supporting the deep freeze expeditions down at the bottom of the world. There were beavers on wheels, on floats, on skis, on great big amphibious floats with wheels tucked in them so you could land on the lake or the runway. Your pick. An airplane designed for a trapper's lake in Saskatchewan ended up serving on every continent on the planet, because it turned out the whole world had short fields and heavy loads and lousy weather. The bush was everywhere. It just went by different names. Let me tell you what it's like around one, because I want you to feel it, not just hear a list of dates. You walk up to a beaver on floats, and the first thing you notice is you have to look up. It sits tall on those floats, nose in the air, and you climb up onto the float and up into that cockpit like you're mounting a horse inside. It's all metal and honest smells. Avigia is oil, hot sun on aluminum, a little bit of lake. You prime that Wasp Jr. Hit the starter, and the prop swings through. One blade, two, three, and then she catches with a cough and a bang and settles into that lumpy, glorious radial idle. The whole airplane is alive and shaking. Taxiing on the water, you're not steering with your feet the way you would on a runway. You're working with the wind and the water rudders, sailing this thing like a boat with wings. And then you line up into the wind, and you feed in all 450 of those horses, and the Wasp Jr. stops muttering and starts to roar. The floats come up on the step, that sweet spot where she's planning on top of the water instead of plowing through it, spray flying off to both sides catching the light, and then the pounding stops and you're off, clean climbing out over the trees. That's why those men wanted power instead of speed, right there. That moment coming off the water heavy, that's the whole airplane in one sound. Now I get a little grumpy about a lot of modern trends. You all know that about me, but here's something that gives me hope. That airplane, 70-some years on, is not a museum piece. Beavers are still working, still hauling fishermen into Alaska, still flying floatplane tours, still tied off at docks in the north where a paved runway is a rumor. Folks rebuild them from the floats up. A company out in British Columbia, Viking Air, actually holds the rights to the design now, and will hang a turbine engine on one for you and send it back out to work another 40 years. They built an airplane so right, so exactly what the job needed, that we can't come up with a good enough reason to stop flying it. And that, friends, is why every year at AirVenture, when you walk down to that seaplane base on the water and you see that bulldog nose and those barn doors sitting among the floatplanes, you're not looking at nostalgia. You're looking at a working airplane that happened to come to the party. An airplane a group of bush pilots dreamed up because nobody built the one they actually needed. So by golly, they described it. And de Havilland Canada was smart enough to listen.
Go down and look at it while you're here. Stand on the dock. Wait for one to start up and come off the water. It'll rattle your fillings loose and you'll grin like a fool, I promise. The history in this one I owe to the record left by de Havilland Canada and the folks who've kept the Beaver's story alive, right down to Viking Air out west, still building them. You can find us anytime at radiohanger.com. This is Tail Dragger, down by the water at Oshkosh, telling you the best airplanes get designed by the people who have to fly them. Go find a float plane and say hello.